Welcome to Vacant Expressions, 1 hour of your life you will not get back. We are your hosts, John and Wesley Fox, here in, it's the beginning of summer, officially, and the summer blockbuster season is well underway, and so far it has tripped and fallen out of the gates straight into the mud, unfortunately. So we
it's bad.
I mean, Endgame, technically Endgame is not part of the summer season because it was in April. So as awesome as that was, and it made us, you know, it's 2.7 billion or wherever it's at right now. I mean, that was like the highlight of the year so far. And then came May and June, and we've been fed just, and I haven't seen all the movies, but like the ones I have seen have just been loads of crap. So we're going to talk about a little bit about some of the movies. We're not going to do full reviews or anything. Just kind of, I think we are going to do a eulogy to X-Men and Dark Phoenix. But I think in general, and also talk a little bit of TV about what we've been watching lately. There's still some awesome TV on there at least, so don't have to go to the movies. So that is what we have for you today. But first, we will start with our usual first step to our TV shows. What are our TV shows? The podcast. Talk about what we're drinking. So, John, what are you drinking?
I'm back to this like favorite that I have for summertime. I think like last summer it was like summertime shandy. It was just like one of the most delicious, refreshing beers. Right now, for me, it is from the Denver Beer Company. It's called Princess Yum Yum. It's a raspberry Kolsch, and it also has just, I guess Yum Yum is a fruit that it has in there as well. So it is really, really, really good. It's just so delicious, so refreshing. I mean, a Kolsch, as you know, could lend itself really good to fruit flavoring without it seeming like you're, like, you know, pairing, like, you know, sweet with bitter, and it's just not working. The sour notes of it, of the raspberry and the yum yum working with the Kolsch together, and it's just, it's a great, refreshing summertime beer.
Now, are you, I don't know if they sell these in bars, but are you secure enough in your masculinity to order one in a bar if it was there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I order that with pride.
I want a Princess Yum Yum.
Yeah. No, and you got, and you say it with a little lower voice. Yeah, I'll take the Princess Yum Yum.
Yeah, I'll take a Princess Yum Yum.
Yeah, and the lady will have a scotch.
Yeah. Neat. Well, that I love Kolsch. Kolsch is my favorite, one of my favorite styles, and it's just, I wish I would have discovered it sooner, because to me it's better than any American wheat or light American wheat, which is basically what I drank exclusively for years until, you know, until I developed, you know, a taste for other things besides just, you know, watered down wheat beer. But Kolsch is just awesome. There, North Carolina had two or three really awesome Kolsches. They're harder to find up where in the Washington area right now because this place worships IPAs here. But every so often I do find one. So it's my favorite style. I don't think I've had a raspberry Kolsch yet, but that does sound interesting. It's great summer beer. Like Kolsch is perfect for summer. It's lighter. It's just great stuff. I decided to go whiskey. Today I have Jameson Caskmates, the stout. The stout cask mate, and it was on sale, so I got it for $28.
Which, oh fuck yeah,
yeah. It's normally.
How do you like that one? I think I've only really drinking just the regular Jameson.
It's better.
It is.
It's better than standard Jameson because it has.
All right.
It has a little bit more body and a little bit more flavor. Not too much. I mean, it's still Jameson. It's still largely Jameson, but it has a little bit more. I think the porter casks they use give it a little bit more kind of, I don't know. I don't know what, I guess.
Does it taste like it's going to give you a worse hangover though? You know how sometimes those like extra whiskeys that they add, they're like, oh, get this double barreled, blah, 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 something. And after I have one, it's like, yeah, that tastes good. But I feel like I'm going to feel that in my head tomorrow way worse than just the regular JMO.
Yeah, I do. You do get the impression that if you really had a bunch of these, that, yeah, it would hurt the next day. But I feel that way about Jameson in general.
Okay, that's fair then. That's not a big difference.
No, Jameson is just, I love it. It's a great, it's just the great kind of standard, you know, frontline workhorse whiskey that I keep in my apartment. I just today, you know, the Caskmate happened to be on sale, so it was basically the same price as the regular one, so I went for it. I do like it a little bit better than the standard Jameson, but, you know, it's really, But, you know, like you were saying, like, there is a little bit more to it. There's probably more sugar in it. And so probably the hangover factor is probably a little higher. So it's something to sip on. It's not something to – you don't want to hit it. I don't think you want to hit it too hard. I think that
– then what's the point? No, just kidding.
You want to get drunk, drink the standard Jameson. You want to slow down a little bit, I'd suggest some of the other higher premium Jamesons. But anyway, yeah. And I'm drinking it out of my Chicago whiskey glass. It has the – roadmap, or it's not really, well, kind of a roadmap, but basically an outline of the major roads in Chicago wrapped around the side of it and a bunch of the area codes. So, like, you know, 847, 312, 869, or I know that's.
Are you just reading them off the glass now?
Yeah, yes, I am. Oh, wait, shit. These are also GPS coordinates. Fuck.
Shit.
All right, never mind. Never mind the area code thing. It was just a coincidence that the GPS that two of the GPS numbers match up with area codes.
Yeah, you said 847 and 312.
There is.
That's hilarious.
All right. Well, anyway, so that's that. Moving along. I did see Dark Phoenix, X-Men Dark Phoenix. You have not, and I really just cannot recommend that you spend the money in a theater to see it. So,
yeah, I don't care. You could spoil it.
So we're, okay.
The word's out of how horrible it is. I don't really care if it gets spoiled, and I'll just watch it a year later just to laugh at it, probably drinking whiskey in a rage.
So this is a good follow-up to our whiskey-fueled rant on just the X-Men franchise in general.
Seriously, who would have thought? I mean, I guess it was not a bad prediction that this one would have been bad, but, like, how much worse? I was really – as you hear these, when there's a new movie coming out that's been bad in the past, but, like, maybe it'll be good this time, I always have this dumb, wide-eyed, childish optimism, and I've just been getting disappointed time after time. And, you tell me about the disappointment.
Well, we had low expectations, and there was kind of this thought that, like, well, they haven't done the last couple very well, with the exception of Logan, that, you know, this probably was not going to turn it around. But this – Dark Phoenix is arguably the worst X-Men movie. They could have ended on a high note with Logan, and they decided to make one or two more, and this one is just a sad, sad final chapter. And it makes a lot of the mistakes that we talked about in the last show. It's bad. Maybe to start off with, I mean, everyone kind of knows the story of the Dark Phoenix character. It's a different version of Jean Grey, basically. And there's a couple causes as to, you know, how this power comes to Jean Grey. Because for most of the X-Men, she's just a telepath and telekinetic, you know, not overwhelmingly powerful. But as Phoenix, she is the most powerful mutant on Earth and in some parts of the storyline can destroy stars. So this is a different kind of being and a different, not really a mutant. So like in some of the times it's just a latent or kind of not a latent, but kind of a hidden mutant power that Professor Xavier is suppressing to save her, you know, to protect her and to protect the world. In other cases, it's an alien kind of force that inhabits Jean Grey, and that, you know, Jean Grey is able to harness it and actually use it, but it kind of consumes her. So it changes her personality, she becomes somebody else, yada yada. So they went with the whole, you know, external force occupying Jean Grey angle for this one. So, I mean, you can tell that from the previews. It's not really too much of a spoiler there, but I will spoil the movie because, as you said, you're not going to watch it for a while. But really, none of that was really terrible, and Sophie Turner as Jean Grey, actually a pretty good choice. She's a pretty good actress. She did great on Game of Thrones. The writing in this movie is just so bad. And the scenes and everything is just so, like, cardboard, plastic, fake. Just, you know, shit just happens just for the sake of, you know, hey, we need a scene here where they all fight, so let's just, you know, get them to fight somehow. And it's just, this is one of my favorite lines from Rick and Morty. It is a joyless money grab, is what this movie was.
A joyless money grab.
There's no joy in this movie.
I mean, it's in something that I want to say, even though I'm going to bash the franchise a lot. A problem that X-Men has actually never had has been acting talent. I think casting and acting talent has always been very strong. Even there's some slight things that have annoyed me, but for the most part, they're just crushing it. I'd complain a lot more about a lot of other movies, and then you just reluctantly end up being okay with it. But I just can't complain too much about the X-Men's casting, and no one really stands to the surface that much. Except for me just wanting Gambit to be a more awesome character that was incorporated a lot more. And that's just a very personal bias for me, particularly. But other than that, there's not too many complaints, especially they did with the new class and how they did to revamp it and everything. I think it was all really well done, and I liked them doing this whole casting thing again. It was amazing that they did it twice. So whoever's in charge of that or has been doing a good job, but it's definitely been lacking in the writing, and when it really shouldn't be. You have so much great source material, and I just can't believe this one was so much worse. I got excited for it because I saw the first preview for it right after or during the Avengers. And so I was just thinking, because in my mind I'm seeing this amazing production value. I was like, I bet you X-Men is going to step up their game, especially if they're advertising right around here. Again, my wide-eyed optimism. And I was getting pumped for it. And even if the reviews weren't great, I would have still gone to see it. And then they were so freaking bad. I'm like, I don't even want to put myself through this right now.
It's not worth the money. I would definitely, and honestly, even once it becomes available on streaming, I'm sure other movies, there's probably plenty of other movies to see instead. This is a movie that just is not worth seeing. And it sucks because it introduces a lot of the characters and gives them a little bit more time than like Nightcrawler's in this one, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. I love Nightcrawler. Mm-hmm. Always loved Nightcrawler. And
it was the best one to play in the video game.
And it's just, and Storm has a little bit more, but still, they just decide, you know what, we want to give Storm a certain minimum allotted lines and no more. Mm-hmm. She's like one of the most interesting fucking characters. She's one of the coolest, and they totally just, you know, bench her for the most part of this movie. And this is the second time they've done it. They did an Apocalypse, they did it again here. They give Cyclops a little bit more time on screen, and you do get a little bit of the relationship with him and Jean. So, I mean, so they didn't mail that in. They kind of do in the other movies, but this one it's better. But it's still, you know, they have to rush through that because they didn't establish that in the previous movie. So, again, I mean, they're jumping things and they're kind of like, and then, you know, Mystique's role in the X-Men, which I don't remember her ever being a good character in the cartoon or in the comics that mm-hmm. I read. I know she probably has been in other iterations, but so it's just, and you know, it's Jennifer Lawrence, you know, one of the best actresses, you know, of this generation. And this is how they decided to use her, you know, her role and everything. Like, she had much more of a role in the earlier movies. This one, it's just, you know, they give everything to Sophie Turner, Jean Grey. And they give a lot of time to, obviously, you know, James McAvoy as Professor X. And, of course, Fassbender as Magneto. So they just rely so much on those three and give everyone else just a lot less opportunity to really, you know, show the talent we know they have. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's a waste of talent, and it's a waste of the source material. And it was written without, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to explain. Like, it's a movie that had just no emotional draw in whatsoever. You didn't really feel sad, happy, excited at any real point in this movie. Mm-hmm. It just did not elicit any emotional response. It is joyless.
It is a joyless money grab. All right. Better explain that statement. Very thoroughly explained. And I don't know what the hell this means, because we technically have had the reboot version of it with the new class. I mean, you think the theory that they might have learned their lesson here, how much would they learn it? Would they swipe everything, or would they just replace the directors and the writers and still use all the same cast? Like, what do you think they would do if they were going to fix this realistically?
I think you have to put it away for a while. I think the cast, the directors, the writers, all of it needs to go. I think that's exactly what they're going to do, too. I think they're not going to put any more money into any more X-Men movies, unfortunately. So I think the odds of a Gambit movie just went down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all right if they're not ready. I mean, he's my favorite. So if they're not ready and they're going to fuck it up, just postpone it. I've been waiting this long anyway.
So I don't know if that's what they're actually going to do, but I just don't see the – and they are. They did not – this movie does not end like it's the conclusion to the series, like, or conclusion to all the movies. There's still plenty of more storyline that can unfold. So it's not like there's a large amount of fatalities or this is like the end of all things. Like it's actually Apocalypse had higher stakes than this movie did.
So – but do we think that they'll actually stop this cast in this franchise, do you think? Because I know that's what the nerd in you thinks it will take to fix it. But what do you think realistically they'll actually do? I heard the director and writers freaking apologized. Said it was their fault.
I think the consensus is in on this movie. So there's no defending it. Fox and Disney are not defending it. I think Disney takes full control, and I think in other times, like, they've definitely shown that they'll pause on something to get it right. So for Star Wars, for example, you know, they helped after the Solo movie did not do very well, and Solo did a hell of a lot better and is a better movie than Phoenix. So I think if it follows suit, and I don't know who's in charge of the X-Men property, if they're going to put a team together like they did for Star Wars, where mm-hmm. it's Kathleen Kennedy's the head of the Star Wars part of it, I think what they might do is I think from the top down, they're going to put in new producers. They're going to have to look at exactly how they want to use the X-Men, and I honestly do believe that it's gonna take a couple years, and they're probably going to reboot. If they don't reboot, I think you might see like individual origin stories or just one-off movies about one or two characters instead of X-Men movies, you know, like a Wolverine movie. Possibly the Gambit movie is still greenlit. I don't know. It's just the odds. Yeah. It seems to me the odds of it have dropped, but still possible.
I'm down to wait for it. I know. I mean, I was just curious what they do. Disney has been a little bit better about this than I expected them. So it'd be nice if they take this loud and clear and spend a couple years and completely reformat it and just like research and what's been done wrong and what could be done right. And obviously with the Avengers franchise, there's so much to learn from. If there's got to be somebody in the room that says we can make X-Men like they made the Avengers and turn into a 22 movie, like mega freaking franchise or whatever, we just have to start it right.
Yeah. And to me, X-Men has enough material, and you can do that exact same thing you did for Avengers for X-Men, giving it, but also giving it its own style and its own kind of flavor to it. And, mm-hmm. I mean, you could still use these same actors and actresses if you wanted to. They're all young enough. That's not like they're going to age out anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So you could definitely use them. I would strongly – but normally with reboots, you kind of redo the cast too. So maybe maybe it's not a reboot, but maybe it is. The next movie comes out in 3 to 4 years, and they try to separate themselves from the previous movies, you know, and kind of, I mean, Terminator's doing that right now with Dark Fate. The new Terminator movie is basically ignoring all the other Terminator movies except for the first two. Which is a great idea.
Yeah, it is a good one. They're like, what if we, do you think people would be mad? No, I think they'd be fine with it.
No. We've done focus groups, and there's 100% support for it.
100% support for it. Well, they're like, yeah, have you been reading my mail?
All the comments I leave on IMDb.com and Rotten Tomatoes, you guys are listening? So, yeah, I just think that that's they know they can do that. Other movies have done it, and they're totally okay with ignoring their own material, or their own previous movies, and just dropping movies they'd rather forget about. Avengers never had to do that, but you know what? X-Men has to, and Terminator had to. So it's not a perfect situation, but that doesn't mean you can't, you know, resurrect the franchise. It's not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I mean, I do think it's a waste of a good cast, but it might be what they have to do it the right way and not and not just screw it all up. But like, no one in the cast has ever really done a bad job, so I don't feel like they should be punished. So I have conflicted feelings about it. Like, the nerd in me and the purist is all like, I just want them to just like completely start from scratch and really do like a whole long format one the right way with cool little teasers at the end of the credits. I don't care if they steal app from them. Do all these origin stories and have them connect together in an amazing way. Bring out Bishop and do time travel. Like, come on. This is so much amazing stuff. And then just making it look a little bit more live action and a little bit more real, and we don't need the light show necessarily. Like, the light show will come out inevitably, you know, but we don't need it like thrown at us constantly.
Yeah, I agree entirely. They need to be a little bit more strategic about that. And also just, you know, we need to know like what the rules are of this world. And that's something that X-Men never does well. You never really know what the fucking rules are. Like, there are things in this movie that happen, and I don't really know why, and I don't really fully understand what the hell I just watched. So,
yeah, they've done that in other ones because they try to one up each other, and when it's that type of director, then like that Michael Bay style of trying to one up the previous thing before, and you make up something, which Avengers was starting to freaking have that problem because we brought it up before in another podcast. Tony Stark's suit. At what point is he just freaking God?
Yeah.
Like, is his suit built into, like, his cells or some shit? Like, what the fuck?
I think there's actually some other support for this. I liked the mechanical Iron Man suit, not this nano thing.
Seriously, I really did too, because it was, like, a realistic toy.
Well, it's you step into something and it like encloses you. That's freaking awesome. This like thing where this just magically materializes over your what you're wearing is, you know, it gave them a cool. It was a cool visual for like all of 5 seconds, and then after that, it's like that's cool, but I mean that doesn't make any damn sense.
How strong is it really? You know, like
how does it break?
Yeah,
we don't really know. I mean, Thanos broke it, but we don't know how. It just kind of stopped rematerializing or something. I don't know. Like, does it rust? Does it bend? Does it burn? Like, does it melt? We don't fucking know.
Will it eat Tony?
Will it eat? Yeah. Will it one day eat Tony? Like,
and where is Jarvis centrally located now?
Yeah.
Like, is it in the suit? Is there a chip? I need to know this stuff because so much of what it made Iron Man cool was like it scratched the surface of some technology, and it didn't have to be like an engineer's dream or anything, but like it definitely like, you know, seemed obtainable in some cool ways. Like they put a little bit of thought into it, and he seemed like a realistic engineer. And at what point, like when did Tony have the time to design that nano thing? Like is just Stark Industries still making trillions of dollars off of fucking blood? Like,
yeah, are there. And there's a whole part of sci-fi. I know this isn't Avengers is probably not sci-fi. It's not sci-fi. But there's like a whole part of sci-fi that's all about powered suits and mechs and shit like that, like in military sci-fi. That is like a real thing. And to see Iron Man kind of deploy it that way and it for it to be part of his, you know, character arc and to be part of the Avengers, like, an, you know, one's a god from Asgard, you know, one's from a radiation mistake, one's an assassin. Everyone becomes an Avenger through a different path. And in Tony's case, he built his. That was cool. The further they got into the magic and the kind of like, you know, Tony Stark can invent anything at any time, anywhere, physics be damned. Just kind of started taking that away from him, and he just became no different than the other more magical characters. So that's what, you know, that's a minor quip about that. But, yeah, I mean, I guess turning back to X-Men, I mean, all they have to do is, in a way, just set the rules for the viewer so they know, like, where these mutants and these powers stand, what they're capable of, what they mean, instead of, like, you know, anything's possible. You know, this can do this, this can do that. You know, she can breathe in space. You know, this, you know, Phoenix can, you know, Phoenix and Magneto can have this, like, telepathic fight over a helicopter. It was a dumb scene. I don't know what they were thinking when they set it up. But basically, Phoenix is pissed off at these soldiers that are coming to, like, you know, and they have their guns drawn on her and everything. Of course, that won't do any good. So she basically starts lifting the helicopter up with her mind and is basically getting ready to push it into the trees and blow it up. And Magneto's trying to stop it. So the two of them, it's almost like, you know, the psychic battle in South Park. You know, when they're...
Oh, my God. I almost want to watch that scene to make fun of it like that. We just add our own sound effects.
Yeah.
All right. So that's pretty good. I mean, that's campy.
Yeah.
That's ripe for parody.
So you can put...
But, I mean, going back into the thing that's like, if they did decide to do this right, and they hopefully should, it'd be a really great opportunity, because something about the X-Men was about including everyone, no matter how different they were. And there's a big push in this culture right now is just being completely inclusive of all different types of people and trying to have them represented. And X-Men could do such a good job with that, even if they're like changing characters, changing races, genders, this and that, if they all end up redoing it. If they do X-Men thoughtfully, like it should be done, it's like such a relevant thing for all the different lives.
Yes.
Civil stress that's happening in our time now that is happening more than it was when, you know, X-Men got started in the late 90s on the big screen. You know, like it wasn't really as big of a deal. I mean, it was an underlying thing, but now it's at the surface, and this is definitely the time for it. Like, X-Men can represent that, and everybody in the world trying to freaking get along, you know, or like what the struggle really is. I don't know. I'm sure there's somebody else that could say it better than me, but there's just so many analogous things to like what's happening now that if it was just done well, it could be really inspirational for a lot of people.
Take it away from these action movie writers that obviously don't fully understand the source material, and their background is basically making, you know, almost like Fast and Furious movies.
And all they get told is what their superpowers are, and then they write the story around that.
Yeah, and then, well, they also think that that's...
Mutant powers.
Well, they treat that, and you can see in this movie and in the previous movies, they think that that's enough to impress crowds. But, like, we've been having superhero movies and, like, fantastic CGI shows for, like, almost going on 20 years of these fantastic movies. That's, mm-hmm. That doesn't impress anyone anymore. And the fan service, you know, when they introduce when they bring in a character, a cameo, or they show something of a hint of something that's also in the comic books, X-Men sometimes can do that well in the previous movies, but in other times they're just so, clumsy about it. And it's just like, you guys have so much to work with, and that's the best way you can introduce, like, Psylocke, for example. She's not even in this fucking movie. And she's like one of the favorites from the Apocalypse movie that only had two or three lines. And I remember everyone's like, when is she going to have a bigger role in a movie? When is she going to have her own movie? People like really like her character. And like in this movie, they're like, nah, we don't need her. Why make that decision when you've already introduced and it's played by Olivia Munn. Who doesn't like Olivia Munn? Seriously. And to not put her in there's no reason not to like her. So
yeah,
like,
there's so many like mistakes. They could cast great people and do great things. And I mean, I think Hugh Jackman saved all the Wolverine movies just because he's so awesome as Wolverine. They could even give him bad material, and you're like, he's just so amazing as Wolverine that you just look past it. You know, like, and that's one of the people that's been able to cut through it. And Wolverine, I feel like they have been trying to be a little bit more thoughtful for his story, but that's like the only character, him and Progressive X. They haven't even been that good with Jean Grey, even though they give her a lot of screen time. They tried to do a little bit more with Magneto, but pretty much Progressive X and Wolverine are the only one that's gotten any serious attention, and thoughtfulness and that's not enough.
Yeah, they do. I mean, the earlier movies lean heavily on Jackman, Patrick Stewart, and Ian McKellen. And then a little bit less so on some of the secondary characters. I mean, really, they rely on those three to drive the three movies. And then Frankie Johnson for the X-Men Last Stand movie. And she was, you know, the first Phoenix movie. In this movie, like in this one, it's kind of the same. It's James McAvoy as Professor X and Michael Fassbender as Magneto. Hugh Jackman only factors in Days Future Past. So they use more, and then they use Jennifer Lawrence a lot as Mystique. So they need those three. Well, in this one, they try to, you know, lean a lot on Sophie Turner, and, you know, she's a talented actress, but You know, they can't save a bad movie. I mean, yeah. Tom, like Will Smith, everyone likes Will Smith, but he's been in some shitty movies. Now, so just because you cast Will Smith or you cast, I mean, Tom Cruise, who makes, you know, has made a fuck ton of money in movies. He's also been in some bombs. So just casting great people is not going to save your movie. And even casting two or three great people is not going to save a bad movie. And there's just the evidence is overwhelming. They still haven't seemed to fully have learned that lesson yet. And I think this X-Men movie shows it, because I think it's probably going to end up losing money. I don't think it's going to break even. And for Disney and for Fox and for Marvel, I mean, that's a kick in the nuts, like a total kick in the nuts. I don't think they've ever had a failure like this before, money-wise, you know, business-wise. It's debuted. It had the worst debut of any X-Men movie, the worst. Like, and the first one debuted 20 years ago. So you factor in inflation and all that
the
shit.
The first one in 20 years.
The first one did better, and that was 20 years ago when tickets were probably half the price they are now. Seriously.
Oh my gosh, that's not even adjusting for inflation or inflation of ticket prices alone, which is probably higher than inflation.
So, all right.
Oh, that's intense, man, when you really put it like that.
Yeah. So, all right. I mean, the other things I can bitch about, kind of dig into the individual scenes and stuff, and maybe we don't need to do that, since, I mean, one, you didn't see it, and two, I think we've beaten this thing over the head for now a podcast and a half. So yeah. maybe we should move on here.
That's a good call.
So next movie that was not a bomb, but probably maybe didn't quite meet expectations was Godzilla King of the Monsters, which... different kind of movie, because this is not a movie with rich source material where you need a dynamite cast, and Godzilla is a monster movie. It's a pretty straightforward objective, pretty straightforward thing you need to do. And this movie, I mean, I'll be more careful with this, because I think you should see it in a theater, actually. So I won't spoil it, but I will kind of, as my quick review, say that the things I like to see in these movies is like monsters destroying cities. And monsters fighting each other. This movie has that. And it's pretty, I mean, the visuals are good, but not great, because some of the combat is obscured by snow, rain, and water, and all sorts of other things. So they don't, you know, kind of like what Michael Bay does when Transformers are fighting. Like the camera perspective changes so rapidly, so you can't see the weaknesses in the animation.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of does the same thing. I don't think it was really necessary, because to me, visually, I could not detect any problems. Like, I mean, they're monsters. I mean, they're giant monsters. They did a pretty good job with Rodan, with Mothra, with Ghidorah, Godzilla, and some of the others, you know, ones that they don't name. There's like 18 of them in this movie, but only like 4 or 5 of them are really on screen much. So, I mean, this movie accomplishes that. I guess the reason I kind of was disappointed in it is that, like, they got you don't need much, but it seems like they were really lazy. And, I mean, there was just some stuff that you didn't need to do. You didn't need to skip. Like, you could have spent a few more minutes on this scene with this dialogue. Like, this could have made a little bit more sense. I mean, there's plot holes for sure. I mean, monster movies tend to have them. It's not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
There's some cheesy dialogue. Again, monster movie. You're going to get that. But some of the scenes, like, they just, one or two scenes made me cringe. And I'm like, I know this is a monster movie, but goddamn, guys. Like, that was bad. but it has all the things you want. They actually bring in some of the music from the older movies.
Yes.
The old score.
That's so fucking epic. Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, it's cool. I mean, the callbacks to it. I mean, and just Ghidorah is just fucking terrifying. I mean, he's fucking huge. And he's three heads, and it flies. And it's just...
he's three heads, and he flies.
And there's... Oh, and there's... and there's... And that's... And there's more. I mean, I won't get into it, but there's more. Ghidorah can do more than that. It's just...
Yeah, all right. I can't.
Jesus Christ.
Is this still in theaters near me? Hold on.
Yeah. And it has... what's her name? Millie Brown from Stranger Things. Actually, I think I'm... I might be missing her middle name. I think she goes by her... three names. Yeah, Millie Bobby Brown. So she's in it. You know, she actually, you know, she does a pretty good job. It's, you know, with the writing they give her and the scenes they give her, but...
She's talented. She really yeah. is. I mean, and when I heard, I heard someone say it's like she's able to have a connection with Mothra, I was like, oh my God, and like Elle from Stranger Things could speak to Mothra with her mind, I need to see that. All right, that's just, even if other things there's failings, like, that was a good choice. It's just a good choice.
I wish, I mean, the cool thing, like, that this stuff always has is because they connect them to, like, ancient myth, like Asian myth or Oriental, or not Oriental, but Caribbean, ancient, like, European or Middle Eastern. Like, I wish they could have done a little bit more of that, because in the movie, they just basically say, oh, these are dragons from myth. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. Just, can you do a little more?
Just a little bit more.
Like, why is his name Rodan? What is mm-hmm. Rodan? Give us a little bit more. Like, he just yeah. pops out of a fucking volcano. It's awesome. All right? Totally cool. Like, Rodan's introduction is cool as hell. Mothra's introduction is cool. I mean, they all have great intro, like, their intro scenes. Like,
perfect.
Like, that's my cue. Like, that's all greatly done. And then the couple of the battles are really cool. But then in a few others, like, you know, the camera's moving so fast, the animation's rapid. There's like a rainstorm going on, so that obscures some of it. And then the last final battle's kind of weird. So it gets weird. Dude, yeah, things get weird. Like, not like, you know, like you're going to walk out of the, it doesn't ruin the movie necessarily. I'm not saying it ruins the movie, but it's, yeah, the final scene, I was just like, dude, that was, what was that?
The fuck was that?
Dude, what the hell just happened? So.
I might just go see it tomorrow for my birthday.
It's cool. I mean, it's worth seeing.
Just by myself.
You know, it has a lot of the stuff that I've been dying to see for years, for decades. And the first Godzilla movie in this new reboot is badass with Godzilla. Hey,
I will say this, man. Right now it's got 92% like this movie for Google users. That's pretty high.
It's fair to say the fan base is satisfied. Like,
yeah,
it nailed it.
It's fair to say. That's perfect.
Like, it's yeah, they're
it's like everything you just described, it kind of sounds like I want to see it. It perfectly described the Godzilla movie experience I want to have.
Yeah, and I know they're setting up a Godzilla versus King Kong movie, and so that's coming, and but Godzilla's just he's huge in this movie. He's fucking huge. He seems to be bigger than he was cool. in the previous movie, it's cool shit. I would recommend. I mean, it's a kaiju movie. You're getting exactly what you're asking for, and no more. And yeah, it's worth seeing, especially on the big screen. And I don't know if it's in, it probably is in 3D. I didn't see it in 3D, but honestly, I think if you see it in 3D, it might make you a little dizzy. Okay. I saw it in 2D and it started making me a little dizzy. So anyway, those are the two movies I have seen. The two movies I have not seen that I'll just mention really quick that are at least, you know, according to reviews and from fans and from critics are just total like shit the bed. Like Men in Black apparently had totally shit the bed.
I was actually looking forward to the two of them.
Yeah, this one. Let's see, where is it in IMDb? Like, I mean, Rotten Tomatoes is a lot of people don't trust it anymore for good reason. So I don't use Rotten Tomatoes anymore.
Yeah, I don't completely go by it. I kind of do an average because I know sometimes people could be really extra harsh on there.
Yeah, and there's troll. I mean, they claim and they tell you when you go to the site, they have a pop up that tells you they've revamped the user rating system so that trolls can't fuck it up. So that's one thing. But if you go to IMDb is a little bit straighter, and it's a Men in Black International is at a 5.6, and that's generally, like on IMDb, a 7 is a standard average movie. 7. Mm-hmm. If you're in the 6s, you're weak. If you're in the 5s, you're it's a disaster.
Yeah, so, they might not. I mean, they were a cool duo, and
honestly,
at a certain angle, his eyebrows and his eyes, he looks like a young Tommy Lee Jones.
Like, once again, it's a dude, like, it's people that we like. Like, it's Hemsworth and it's Tessa Thompson. Like, again, good casting. I like mm-hmm. both of them. They're fucking Fat Thor. I mean, it was fucking great. Like, Tessa Thompson is definitely, she's in Westworld and she's in, you know, Avengers as a Valkyrie. So, again, the rule. Like, you can cast the coolest people and the most talented actors. They're not going to save a bad movie.
Yeah.
And, audience, yeah. Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes is actually a little bit nicer to it.
so, oh, wow. I mean, they're just glad to see the series back.
Yeah.
You know?
I, for one, have never cared for the series, but I know a lot of people do. And I did like that. The first one was kids. Cool.
When the first one came out, it was cool. Because we were still really into, like, aliens back then. And, like, the secret, like, X-Files and all that. Like, it was that part of our childhood kind of was, like, slowly coming to an end. By the time the second Men in Black movie came out, it was dumb. It was ruined. And it wasn't that good anymore. Like, that whole genre wasn't being really respected that well anymore. So you're kind of moving on to other things. But the first one still came out at a time where it struck the iron while it was hot, I feel like, and that one I liked.
It was like a cool kind of contrast because it was – I think it came around the time of the end of X-Files. And it was cool. I think it was after – yeah. So it was right around that time where that topic was hot. And we were seeing like X-Files took a very serious, somber tone to it. And, you know, and X-Files mm-hmm. is one of the coolest TV shows ever. It is mm-hmm. It was a good part of our childhood.
Yeah.
And to see Men in Black, which is so much more lighthearted and just so fun. The first movie was cool. I liked it. I thought it was a sign of great things to come. And then that second one just plopped.
I mean, they had to do the one-up thing. They got cheesier and cheesier when they could have, like, stayed the same amount of cheesy and just wrote, like, cooler stories. But like they just got goofier and goofier, and that I felt like that's what they thought they needed to like step up, and it just made it worse. And maybe it was just also I was just getting older, and yeah. it's like this is just getting stupider at the same time.
Yeah. So well, okay. So that's movie wise, that's the last one, and I didn't see it. I'm not gonna see it. Spider-Man comes in a few weeks, which is the first Avenger movie that's post Endgame, and. It's the trailer. I've tried to avoid the trailers, but I did see them when I was in the theater. So there's definitely some tie-in to Iron Man and Tony Stark. So there's going to be some feels. Because, you know, Spider-Man is supposed to be kind of the successor to Iron Man in some ways. So it's...
interesting.
And so part of the movie looks like it's Peter Parker kind of trying to, you know, still finish off high school and be a kid. But, you know, this specter of Iron Man who put so much faith in him and gave him a suit. You know, he's only given a suit to like two or three people in his whole life. And he mm-hmm. gave it to him. And so the trailer's kind of building that up that, you know, Stark is gone. Who's going to be the next Iron
Spider-Man with a suit? Jesus Christ.
He's got it. Yeah, he's got one of those nano suits, man.
Ah, that's pretty gangster. Man, so I haven't seen any of the Spider-Mans with him, and I liked him so much in both the most recent Avengers that I definitely want to watch them all. I think it's because they kept on switching Spider-Mans up. I just kind of gave up, and I didn't care because they changed one more time, and I didn't even see the one before that. But now seeing how they incorporated him with Avengers, I definitely want to go back and watch those movies. I mean, Spider-Man has always been one of the funnest characters all around. I just was starting to get burnt out and just kind of like tuned out of him.
No, I was exactly the same way. I didn't really... I thought the Andrew Garfield movie, I didn't even watch the whole thing. I just thought it was incredible. It was just, And I don't really like Spider-Man all that much to begin with. He's not one of my favorites. So
it's just really fun every time, you know? Like, it's just, yeah, Spider-Man's just hella fun. And it was like that first one with Tobey Maguire. We're all like, why the hell is Tobey Maguire going to be a superhero? And but it was just so freaking good. It was so comic booky. It was so well done. Like, it was freaking awesome.
It had Willem Dafoe as a villain. That's great.
Yeah, that's perfect. That is perfect. There's just so many good things about it. Like, and even though some people will be like, why is Tobey Maguire supposed to be a superhero? That was so weird. But then when it was all said and done, it was like, yeah, I fucks with Spider-Man.
Dude, I liked the first movie. I don't even like the character that much, but I liked the first Tobey Maguire movie.
The second one was good too. I think when they made him emo for some reason, they were introducing the whole Maximum Carnage Venom thing.
Yes.
And they just didn't do it in a good way. And that was when I stopped watching Spider-Man movies. I think me and Dad went to go see that. And we're just like, what?
Yeah, that one was, yeah, I did see it. I didn't see the entire thing in one sitting. Like, I saw it two different times. It was on TV and I just finished it. It's kind of tone deaf to the emo thing of it and just like it's making fun. It's almost like parodying itself and it, with the emo thing and with the dark side of Tobey Maguire and just, yeah, it didn't work. The first two movies are good.
They weren't that far off for that one, honestly. It's not like that one was a complete fucking train wreck like some of these other movies we discussed today. But it was just a big enough miss and something that just needed to continue to move upwards. And then they just – I don't know if they – do they make four with Tobey?
I think it's three, and I think the last one was the Venom storyline. And then the Tobey Maguire had two – or I'm sorry, not Tobey Maguire. Garfield had two. And then Tom Holland's had one, but he's also featured in a bunch of other Avenger movies. So he was in a Captain America movie for a while, Civil War, and then he was in both Avenger Infinity War and Endgame. So he only has one movie of his own, and this is number two. And this is the first.
Okay.
This is the first post Endgame chapter we're going to see, and it's really.
I only got one movie to see to catch up.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, that's good. That's good. I feel like he's been my Spider-Man for a while, and now I understand why, even though I never saw his first one.
The more I learn about this actor, the more I like him. Like,
yeah.
I never liked Garfield. I mean, everything about him, like, and there's nothing he's, I mean, it's not like I've met the guy, you know, I don't know him, but, like, the things I hear about him and then the interviews he gives and everything, I'm like, yeah, he's an actor, whatever. The more I hear about what Holland's like, you know, off screen, the more I just like him. Like, I mean, I've already mentioned this in another podcast. Like, he does the lip sync battle on MTV, and I think he does a Rihanna song, and he just like the cross dressing, the dancing. Like, he just goes full out. Like, he didn't just show up to that like just to have some fun. He's like, no, I'm gonna win this. And if you go to it should still be on YouTube. Tom Holland lip sync battle MTV, and he just. Holy shit, dude. It's at first you're just laughing because, you know, he's cross-dressing and he's dancing like a female, diva role. But, like, he's just so committed. Like, it's just so – I'm like, wow, like, that's – I like the commitment, man. It's creepy, but I like the commitment.
Oh, that's great. That's great. No, I mean, those are fantastic. Everybody really does put a lot of effort in those. And I mean, just gender reversals are just always amazing on those shows. They're really fun and really well done. And I mean, you know, he's kind of a small, pretty guy. You know, I'm sure he does cross-dressing very successfully, very successfully.
Yeah. Well, you do it in this one. You see, like, it's around the time he's done the Spider-Man movie. Like, he's in, like, a corset. But he's got, like, the arms and the shoulder. Like, he's obviously been working out for his role for Spider-Man. So, like, he's actually got – I mean, he's not a big dude, but, like, he's cut.
So yeah, when does the next Spider-Man come out then?
July.
I always forget release dates.
Early July. July 7th. I think it's a 4th of July weekend movie. And
all right. So we could catch it when you're in town maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Gyllenhaal's in it, unfortunately. But Favreau, as Happy, is in it, of course. Nick Fury and Zendaya, who's going to be she's going to be in the Dune movie as
oh really?
Yeah, as one of the key characters. I should know her name offhand. I'm looking up the character's name. But yes, at first I was upset that they picked a Disney star. But
yeah, it comes out July 2nd, it looks like. Far From Home.
Yes, yes. And I think it's... So who does Zendaya play?
So Jake Gyllenhaal is Mysterio? What?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that choice, but we'll see. Chani. Sorry, Chani. So she's a Fremen, the Fremen concubine of Paul Atreides in Dune. So they chose Zendaya, and at first I thought that was stupid because I thought she was just a Disney, you know, another one of those Disney stars that's in all the teenage movies. But she's actually on an HBO show called Euphoria that's getting a lot of attention right now. Basically for the gratuitous nudity, and the characters are supposedly in high school. So,
oh, yeah, great. That's a great time to be doing this.
Yeah, I think they think they're being edgy, you know, showing kind of like the dark side of, you know, high school. But the problem is, I read an article on this, and I don't really know. I'm too old to know this stuff for facts. But they say that just the analysis, sociological analysis of young people and teenagers is that they're not drinking as much, they're not doing as much drugs, they're not having nearly as much sex, and they're not getting pregnant at nearly the rate they used to when we were teenagers. So. A lot of people are arguing that this show Euphoria is like kind of out of date because it's just not really depicting what modern, like it's trying to be modern, but at the same time, it's showing things that were a lot more common in the 90s. So
we really were worse.
Yeah, we were bad. It's terrible. We were terrible.
I didn't know. I thought they were getting worse because of the internet. I was all like, man, they're one-upping us to a degree I didn't even see coming. But
well, yeah, you know what? They are, I mean, in terms of like, you know, attention spans and that shit, yeah, they're worse, a lot worse. But we got
the same devices that are doing it to us, though.
Yeah, I guess the metric, you know, they were looking at the metrics of the show, and it's like, well, you know, it's young kids having sex and doing drugs and, you know, that's terrible. It's all just terrible. And, you know, what would Jesus think? Well, that was kind of more of a thing in the 80s and 90s. It's gradually becoming less of a thing as time goes on because fewer teenagers are having kids. The abortion rate is lower. Like a lot of the things that were just, you know, shocking America back when we were, you know, in our formative years are just not as prevalent today as they were. So it's kind of, I don't know, but it is, they make jokes. I haven't seen the show yet, but like they make jokes that, yeah, there's a lot of gratuitous nudity. There's a lot of penises. So it's a lot of like male and female frontal nudity, and it's kind of trying to show everything: the drug use, the kind of the darker side, you know, different kind of high school experience. So anyway, Zendaya's in that, and she plays one of the key roles. So I don't know. I kind of decided, all right, so she's not just some Disney princess, you know. Maybe she can act. You know, she's taking serious roles that are more adult, and she's, you know, challenging herself to do something more than just, you know, be on a Disney daytime show. So for all I know, I mean, and so anyway, she's Peter Parker's love interest too. Mary, I think she's Mary Jane.
Oh, right on. They might have renamed her. Let's see.
Yeah, that's a good question. Did they rename
Michelle Jones?
No, it's
MJ. So it's still MJ.
It's still MJ, but it's not Mary Jane. It's now Michelle Jones. Cool. Oh, that's cute.
Good job. Aww. All right. Well, that was a compromise in the writing room right there.
That's good. That's clever. That's really clever.
And then, so
Marissa Tomei is Aunt May. I love that.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
So I love, what is it? Tony, was it Tony Stark or some later character is like, that's your aunt? What?
Yeah.
How can your aunt be that hot? You know.
Oh, that's fantastic.
All right.
So, they're doing a good job. At least they're doing a good job with this. We can at least end on a high note. Spider-Man's probably going to be good. I'm going to watch the previous ones. Everything has just been done so thoughtfully, at least with this franchise, being in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that we got something to look forward to. Is there anything else to look forward to? When's the Dune release? When is some of the other stuff? There's a lot of good stuff that was happening. We were all exciting. We've had a couple kicks to the dick. What's the silver lining in the future?
All right, so Dune is 2020, and also Quentin Tarantino, and I just heard, well, I already knew this, but like, there's more detail coming out. Quentin Tarantino is doing a Star Trek movie.
So that's still happening?
Yeah, that's a thing. That's real.
All right, I'm probably going to love it in a weird way, even though it won't be Star Trek.
You know what, if it has a scene where a red shirt is just like, you know what? No, fuck this. Fuck you. Fuck you. I'm not going on this fucking mission. Every red shirt's come back. Like, if Quentin Tarantino incorporates that into one of his scenes and just has a lot of F-bombs, like, I'm
good.
That'd be worth it.
Yeah, what if it is just a Quentin Tarantino movie?
He said it is.
Was like, he did?
Yes, he says, like, no, dude, this is going to be rated R. Like,
I know, but still, like, but his, like, level of dialogue, he's not going to stay true to, like, Star Trek, like, dialogue or anything.
Oh yeah.
That would be so funny. Yeah, I mean, why not? Yeah, I mean, you know, we always want to see more comedic stuff around Star Trek. I mean, whether you're writing it or, like, Orville's freaking doing it or there's, like, the other shit coming out. I don't know. Isn't there going to be a cartoon?
I thought so. Yeah, an animated series.
So there's
– I'm trying to remember now. Sorry.
I'm all over the place.
No, I'm trying – because there's a couple Star Trek things going on. They're introducing a bunch of new ideas. And they're all going to have, like, a different feel to them. So the Tarantino has said that his Star Trek movie is going to be rated R. And it's probably going to be a little bit more towards his style of movie than Star Trek. There's going to be Star Trek Picard, a TV show. There is also going to be there's been talk of an animated show for a while now. I don't know any details on that. And then we have Star Trek Discovery, which I've told is getting better, but whatever. You know, it started off so bad. It's hard for me to really give it a second chance. But anyway, Star Trek, a lot of positivity. Dune, a lot of positivity. Spider-Man, I thought I was used up on superhero movies, but I find myself really wanting to go see Spider-Man now. And then, but turning to TV, some good things coming this summer. Stranger Things, season 3, is coming
here. Wait, that's this summer?
I thought I heard it's in the next month.
Oh my god, that would be awesome. Oh yeah, because they're not going to do the Halloween release and everything. That's cool. All right.
Yeah, let's see. Season 3... July 4th is when it starts. Yep, 4th of July, Stranger Things drops.
I wonder if we should binge-watch that.
Dude, that's... If Spider-Man and then stay up all night watching Stranger Things... Dude, that's
not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. Then maybe we could record a podcast in my place right here. Maybe I'll have you bring your mic and your mic cord. And we can record one here. I got a second input.
Perfect. Yeah, I can do that. We do that in one location.
Fuck yeah.
Sweet.
All right.
Getting more excited about this trip.
That's a fucking plan, man.
So we talked Stranger Things. TV-wise, the new Black Mirror is out. That is just – Black Mirror is just awesome. Just awesome. I haven't seen the new one yet. I got to do that. The new Twilight Zone with Jordan Peele. There's a new show on Amazon called Good Omens. It's based on a Neil Gaiman novel, and it's about, you know, angels and demons, and kind of takes a comic, kind of a not comical, yeah, it is kind of funny, but also just kind of like a lighthearted look at some of the stories of the Bible and some of the secondary angel and devil characters, and it's also an excuse to like put together a lot of their favorite British actors in the same show, like Tennant. Who used to be Doctor Who a few, you know, long ago. He's like British, like British nerds are all about, and Whovians, people who love Doctor Who, they love Matt Tennant. So, and then the other guy's Sheen. But what is his first name? Because I don't want to say Martin Sheen, because that's stupid. It's not Martin Sheen. It's Michael Sheen. David Tennant and Michael Sheen. It's not Matt Tennant. It's David Tennant. Michael Sheen, okay. So anyway, it's on Amazon Prime. It's a kind of a fun take on the Bible and biblical stories, you know, kind of more of in the view of it being mythology and everything. So that's like, that's out already, and then already 6 episodes in, or probably that's might be the whole first season. I haven't started that yet either. It's another thing to watch. On HBO, Big Little Lies. I don't know if you ever, do you know about that show, or do you watch it or aware of it?
Is that I think so. Is that the one with the insane all-star cast of just like A-lister, 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 and it all takes place in like Malibu or some shit or Beverly Hills?
Yeah, it's like, it's like Reese Witherspoon, Zoe Kravitz, Meryl Streep, Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, yeah, I want to start watching that. I don't know. Like, it keeps on getting picked up, so I like kind of want to check it out. Because I saw You're Dead to Me with Christina Applegate and, I don't know, a bunch of other people. And that was fantastic. The first season of that was just, like, spellbinding. Like, Christina Applegate crushed that role. And then, you know, Will Ferrell is one of the executive producers. So, you know, Ron and Veronica are back together again.
What is that on? Is that on Netflix?
HBO.
HBO, okay. So I'm watching.
Wait. No, it's Netflix. It's Netflix. My bad. Yeah, You're Dead to Me is on Netflix, yeah.
I was going to say, like, that Christina Applegate is one of my favorite people on the planet. So I'll watch her. Yeah. I'll watch her about anything.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's really good. I mean, it's not too over the top. It's like, I don't know, it feels like it's got this real element to it, even though it's still like got a soap opera-y drama vibe. It definitely has like a realness to it where it's like, this could all have happened.
Awesome. All right, I'm doing that. All right, so that's, all right, so TV-wise, there's plenty of great things to watch. A couple movies in July. So, I mean, yes.
Yeah, I guess that's always the silver lining. Anytime we complain about movies or this or that or nothing's good coming out, we live in a golden era of television and of just options. So, I mean, we could always just end on a positive note no matter how bad of a movie review we do or how disappointed we are in a franchise and what's happening. We could just go back and be like, let's just be happy of the TV we have. Just be thankful.
You know what? And then the movie's coming out later this year, the Terminator movie where James Cameron is returning to the franchise and they're bringing back Linda Hamilton.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
The trailer is out. The trailer it's interesting enough. And it looks like, obviously, Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to have to do a cameo. I don't know how they're working that in story-wise, but they're going to do it. And then
I think he got that written in early in his contract, and there's just nothing we could do about it.
Yeah.
There's nothing anybody could do about it as long as he's alive. I think his son's written into it after he dies.
How is that going to work? I need to know.
Yeah, like, I mean, CG's amazing. That's how it's going to work.
All right. So next, later on, Dr. Sleep, Stephen King based. A lot of Stephen King movies are coming out, like Pet Sematary, It, the sequel to It's coming out. A lot of that stuff's coming out.
Yeah, let's give him another run. One of the greatest, you know, I don't know, thriller writers of our time. Let's give him another run. Let's him run through some movies again. I know we're doing reboots, but if we're gonna do it, at least let's pull some from like the greats.
I think young folk need to know that the whole reason that we have a horror genre is Stephen King. They're like horror movies in the 60s and 70s were shit, I'm pretty sure. And he started writing these novels and then they started turning them into movies and they just straight up traumatized people for years. I mean, you can talk to, you know, our parents, our older siblings, older cousins, aunts and uncles, talk to anyone who's in their 40s or 50s about Stephen King movies. And they'll tell you, like, whatever movie it is, it's always a different one. And they'll say, yeah, that movie straight up fucked me up. And that's all King.
He's always done a really good job of doing it, sometimes not always being the most over-the-top, gory, ridiculous thing, even though he's really good at that. He could definitely do that, but he definitely is the master of suspense, master of just complete fear and terror without, like, just, you know, a shock, bloodbath, light show, like a lot of movies do today. Like, Stephen King's a fucking master.
No, I've read a few of his novels. I just read The Shining a few months ago, and it is like the coolest haunted house story. It's kind of on the long side, and there's a lot of build up to it, and that's what he does psychologically. He's building up to something, and then when it happens, it just all blows up, and it's terrifying, and it's traumatic, and it's just you know. And he's also known for, you know, writing in, you know, he's really graphic in the way he writes. And I think a lot of, you know, America in the 60s and 70s was still not quite on to that yet. I think there was still a lot of that, you know, conservative Christian, you know, John Wayne, good old fashioned kind of thing going on. And Stephen King was like, yeah, no, I'm going to write in like sex, nudity, violence, like all the darker things of human nature that we all know are true. We just don't want to talk about it. And he would throw them in there. And it was, yeah. So, Dr. Sleep, I have not read. I have read The Shining, which I think is part of the whole universe and whatever. So that is coming out, let's see, November. That's later, 2019. Frozen, the sequel to Frozen, which I think, from what I hear, I haven't seen the first one, and everyone tells me I should. Like, Frozen, mm-hmm. Frozen is one of the coolest
Disney movies ever made. I was going to try and watch it, and it just started with, like, the music so heavily right in the beginning. I was like, nope, I'm not in the mood for it. Like, I know Disney movies are going to have a musical number, and sometimes they get stuck in my head and they're good, but it just came on, like, right at the beginning, and I was like, nope, I'm not in the mood. Like, get me sucked into the movie, then throw in the musical number. I got no choice. I'm already invested in this, you know? But it was a little bit too early on. I do want to watch it at some point. I mean, I do hear parents saying that it's good, too. And kids were insanely obsessed with it, and they just do a good job with all that stuff in general. So I feel like I should sit through it at some point.
They've mastered. They've just mastered that whole genre. They know exactly what they're doing. There's so many Pixar and Disney movies I have yet to see that everyone tells me are just amazing, and I just
Inside Out. You got to see Inside
Out. I know. That's
watch
everyone.
It tonight. Like, watch Inside Out. It's fucking a trip. Dude, Lewis Black is fucking plays anger for internal emotion. It's like inside Herman's head.
Remember that
sitcom
yes.
from the early 90s when
yes.
you were a kid? It's like that. And, like, fucking Lewis Black is the angry one.
Dude, I once sat down and just described, like, if I did have, like, the same thing in my head, Herman's head, who the six or seven characters were in my head, just based on that sitcom.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what if my whole, yeah, what if everyone's psyche was made up of five or six different people in their head, and that's actually who they were? It's like five or six people, and depending on who's in control at any given time, is like who they are. And I just love that idea. All right, yeah. You know what? I'm just, yeah, I'm not going to watch it.
Watch it. Dude, it makes you feel some feels. You're like, why is this a movie? And then it has some really good, clever stuff that, like, if you ever saw it as a kid, man, it would definitely make you rethink the way that you, like, think about thoughts and feelings. Like, it's so well done.
That is all right. So that's on mine. I will put one on you though, TV wise, and the show is Chernobyl. It's
okay.
On HBO. It's I think six or seven episodes. So it's a miniseries, so it's not, you know, it's not a whole new show. It's just one season. But it is entirely based on everything they could collect about, you know, the greatest nuclear disaster in human history. The explosion at the Chernobyl plant, and it just shows you, like, how the Soviet, you know, how, you know, I mean, they have to make a lot of guesses, and they have to, like, write in a lot of things, because there's just not, the Soviet Union did not really share a lot about those years, and so they have to go by what, you know, they could put together. So there is, you know, plenty of, there is some fiction, and there are some things that they've had to fill in. And they tell you at the end, too, you know, they actually straight up created a character to kind of give credit to a lot of the scientists that helped deal. But you'll see in the show, and I knew about Chernobyl, I've read about it, but I didn't know that, like, there was at one point where if they did not get this situation under control, it could have irradiated, like, a whole part of the continent and made it uninhabitable. I mean, Eastern Europe would have been uninhabitable if they could not get this thing under control.
Man, and why do we build more of these, man? Like, we don't even have a really good end game for stuff that, like, takes tens of thousands of years to, like, stop fucking
dude,
us
you
up.
Will,
like,
you'll see some things in there about how this plant was run, and it'll kind of remind you about some of the fucknuts you work with. Like, it is totally like a work. It starts off as like an on the job story. Like, mm-hmm. this is what happens. Like, you know, when everyone complains about their boss being an idiot and their boss being an asshole. Like, this movie is like, yeah, this is what happens when these fuckers are in charge of something important. You know, and so there's a little bit of that, and then there's also, you know, the Soviet Union is. I mean, they're not portrayed as the bad guys per se. Mm-hmm. But obviously, they're very much responsible. Mm-hmm. But they're not. But there's people here working within the Soviet Union that are desperately trying to, you know, deal with the crisis, whereas the Soviet Union is more concerned with, we can't have the world know this happened. So it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. It's not that big of a deal. And these few people that knew the truth, you know, put their lives and their families on the line to basically, you know, go head to head with Gorbachev and say, no, this thing could kill tens of millions of people if we don't. And it's just scary. The one thing I do remember, and I'll share because it's early on in the show and the rest of it's so much cooler, is they send firefighters in to put the damn fire out. Dude, almost all of them died. Because there's radioactive shit. Like, parts of the reactor are on the ground while they're putting out the fire. It was the dumbest idea that firefighters are going to put this thing out. Dumb shit. I mean, man.
On another note, like, so Jesse, she was talking to somebody, and she was kind of younger than her, only a few years younger than her, and they talked about, like, the show Chernobyl, and she's like, oh, I haven't watched the show, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, Chernobyl, so it's about the Chernobyl incident, and she's like, what's that? Like, the Chernobyl, yeah, what is that? Let's back up.
What do they teach you?
You don't know what that word is? Like, I mean, I don't know how I know it, but everybody fucking knows it. Like, people landed on the moon, Russia fucked up a nuclear reactor once.
Yeah, like, bad. Really, really bad.
You know, it's a huge deal. Like, I mean, I guess Fukushima is the only thing you know, but she's like, she wasn't that much younger than me, and like... What?
No, there's things from the Cold War you need to know. And Cuban Missile Crisis, Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, Vietnam, of course, and a few others. Like, these are things that everyone should be taught no matter what your age is. And Chernobyl is just... And then, yeah, there was somebody making jokes online that they loved the show so much they wanted a second season. And then, like, at the bottom of the meme, it shows the people of Ukraine, like, what? No!